gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, super friends, welcome back to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue number 48 for a new comic book day, March 22nd, 2017. I'm your host, Ken, and sitting along here with me in the basement of the Hall of Justice is my good buddy, Vern.
Hello, guys.
So, Vern, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, pretty good. We had a pretty busy weekend, but hey, we're here.
Oh, yeah. We got a packed show for you guys once again this week, like we do for every week. But we got a little bit of everything, including some tabletop gaming news again.
Yeah, this is the second week in a row, isn't it?
I know, it's a little interesting. So, but why don't we jump right into it and get right to TV reviews. Now, we didn't have Supergirl again this week.
No, we didn't. I thought we were going to get it. I was making sure when I was watching on the streaming services if I was seeing something wrong or am I missing something here. No, they, once again, are waiting for the whole musical episode.
Yep.
So getting ready for that.
The next one we get from Supergirl is going to be next week with this, and really that's not even going to be the musical episode. That's actually, at the very end of that, they're going to use it to set up the musical crossover, which is going to happen on Flash.
Okay. Do you think that's still why they're delaying it, waiting for Flash to get everything in order there? Because they're going to be on Flash's world, correct?
Yeah, they're going to, it looks like she's coming over to Earth 1, so I don't know. It's probably coming over to the Flash's world.
Mm-hmm. But, speaking of Flash's world, that's where we're starting off this week.
Exactly. So why don't you let us know what happened on Flash?
Guys, there's a pretty, this is a darker episode, I would say. Nothing really, exciting stuff happening here, but nothing that would make you feel happy happened in this episode. This is more of, like I said, a downer episode. It's had a dark tone to it. We got a sacrifice from one of the speedsters. Well, as we picked up last week, Wally got stuck in the Speed Force where Savitar was, and he's now left in his own personal hell, and it's supposed to just be a loop of a reoccurring thing that happened bad in someone's time. So, and here they're trying to figure out how can they get back and get Wally to come out. So Barry's going to take it upon himself to travel to the Speed Force. Now, last time he went to the Speed Force, didn't he make a promise saying he wouldn't screw up anything else? Well, he did Flashpoint. So if he goes back into Speed Force, he's probably going to have some consequences to deal with, which he does. So everybody's helping him get ready for this. Cisco's going to be the one to let him in there and open up a portal for him. But the problem is, Jesse wants to come with him. And they're trying to tell her, no, she's not ready. And if something bad happens to Barry Wise in the Speed Force, she can take care of everything that's going on in the real world. And there's a big, big problem with that to her. She wants to help Wally. She loves Wally, and she likes to help Barry because, heck, two Flashes are better than one, right?
Always.
But no one's going to let her go in there, especially HR. And HR is like her father at this point. But he keeps telling her, you don't need to go there. You need to let the real Flash take care of this. That struck a bad nerve with her. They had a little bit of a fight scene with that because she winds up punching him and she doesn't let her, when he doesn't let her do what she wants by going after Savitar and beating him up and trying to get back Wally while Barry's in the Speed Force. So the main thing here was she is a Flash. As she says, she is the Flash on Earth too. No one else is there to protect it. And now her being called not the real Flash is kind of a disgrace. It's an insult. So that doesn't go well for her, and she does go after Savitar. But she does wind up beating up, or not beating up Savitar, she winds up hurting Savitar with the same blade that was stuck in Barry from last week.
Yeah.
They find out he is just the man underneath that suit. He's not a god.
Yeah, it looks like the suit is basically just armor for him.
Yeah, and that's why he has the blades on his armor. That's not nothing coming from him. He's still just a regular guy in a suit. And we're waiting now to see what's going to happen. And speaking of that, I loved how they didn't do all-out CGI for this episode. We actually got to see Savitar looks like in a real suit.
Yeah.
I think they need to start doing that more in the show. I know we got that with Grodd and King Shark in the other seasons and previously this season, but it's nice to see them use just a regular costume instead of a lot of the CGI. Use little as that as possible.
Well, a lot of that comes into the straight up monetary. CG costs a lot of money. So they get, yes. they choose where they want to put the CG and where they can put a suit. Because if they can pay once for a suit and have a guy in a suit and it looks as good as, with a little bit of CG upgrades, it's going to cost a lot less than doing CG for the whole show.
And that's what they did for this. I really enjoyed it. I understand why I did it for when he first came out of Speed Force, because he's just running through the whole city in less than the blink of an eye. So I guess it made more sense for him to be more CGI in there. But as we've seen when him and Barry had their little fight, Barry was actually fighting a real live-like person, and same thing happened for Jesse in here. But after she stabs him for his own weapon, I was really worried if she was going to let him go with it stuck in him or she going to pull it back out. She did, so maybe now I can trace him again whenever they need to.
It's a good possibility.
But that was really the side story of the episode. The main story was Barry in the Speed Force, and he goes through these trials of different people that have died in his life that he kind of feels responsible for their deaths. The first one was Eddie.
Yeah, this one answers a couple questions we had from earlier this year, because remember they had announced that we would get Eddie Thawne again, Rick Koznick came back, Robbie Amell came back as Ronnie Raymond, and Wentworth Miller was back as Captain Cold. And all of them were announced earlier this season that they would be on the show. Now we know how they did it. They're actually all part of the Speed Force.
Because me and you were thinking maybe they would get maybe someone coming back to life or do an episode that we never seen before, what happened in the past before they died.
Yeah.
But no, this is all Speed Force ghosts.
And then we did get Mr. Original Flash, John Wesley Shipp, came back this episode also, but not as a ghost, as actually Jay Garrick coming to help Barry.
Mm-hmm. But before we saw Jay Garrick, which was awesome, and anytime I see that dude with his hat, his steel hat on, you get chills.
Yeah.
But his first trial was Eddie in the police department. He's talking how Iris should be his still if he wouldn't have to kill himself to fix Barry's mess. He wasn't able to take down Reverse Flash by himself. If he would have, Eddie would still be there. And he felt bad for that, but then again, he now has Iris, so it's kind of like a win for Barry. It felt like his emotions weren't as attached to him as it should have been, and that's probably why it was his first trial. But once he says, talks to him and says, you know what, we'll let you go and try to save Wally if you can get past the Speed Ghost. So he somehow beats him, and it doesn't catch him. I don't know how. He looked like he phased through it at some point. I didn't think he could even come into contact with it, no matter if he can phase through it or not. But he did. He gets on the elevator, and he goes to level 2. Now, level 2, he has to face really two different characters, but the first one is Ronnie. And before we even get to see Ronnie, we hear a baby crying, and it felt really creepy. It felt like a weird nightmare scene that was happening. And it turns out it's Caitlin holding a baby, and Caitlin's not having any conversation with Barry. It's like he's not even there to her. But then we hear Ronnie come in and say, you see that baby she's holding? That should have been my baby, and we could have been a good family. But because we were on a mission together, I wind up dying because of you, Barry. Once again, your fault. So with all this weighing on his conscience, he's trying to tell him that it wasn't his fault. He needs to stop. People need to stop blaming him for it. And he already knew that he had something to do with it, but he wasn't the one that got him killed. But then again, it's coming back more and more on him, thinking himself, maybe I am the reason. Maybe if I wasn't Flash, maybe none of this would happen to me. Maybe you would still be alive, but that's something I'm going to have to live with. I just want Wally back, so I am trying to fix this. I know I let you guys down, but I'm trying to stop this with helping him. So this is when we got to see Black Flash. Now, this guy scares the crap out of me. And yes. Did you hear what he named him?
Yeah, he thought it was Hunter Zolomon.
Yeah, well, wasn't it Hunter Zolomon?
I don't remember. I think Hunter Zolomon ended up becoming a Black Flash.
And that's what I think they were playing up here. He didn't call him Jay. He didn't call him anything like that. He was like Hunter Zolomon. He could tell it was him. I didn't know if Barry caught what happened to him at the very end of season 2, if he could figure out if he sees a Black Flash again. That's not a ghost. That's Hunter Zolomon being taken over because he messed up. So now you got Ronnie talking trash to him and the Black Flash taking him down. And there's no way he can get out of this. Now, the crescent on the lightning bolt crescent on his chest is the communication between Speed Force and what's going on in the real world for him, Vibe, Caitlin, and Iris, and everyone to hear him. The only way he can beat Black Flash is by taking off his communicator with the lightning bolt on and stabbing Black Flash, and now he's on level 3. But since he did that, his communicator is now lost. So they have no way of getting contact with Barry at this point. Well, the last trial is Captain Cold. And we find out the reason why Barry and Captain Cold had such a good friendship slash, and they're also enemies. /rivalry. It was because they were rivals, but they also looked at each other the same. They respected each other. They kind of made each other better. And that's why he said, Barry, you've changed. You're not the speedster you once were. You're not the hero that you once were. The only reason I sacrificed myself with the Legends was because of you. You taught me everything. You taught me how to be good.
Well, this actually goes back to the comic books. And the comic books, the Rogues, Barry and the Rogues are like that in the comic books, where he respects the Rogues, they respect him, just they're on opposite sides of what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. And they know if Flash comes in, they're going to have to stop him because they want to do what they want to do.
Exactly.
And that was being shown here as well, and I really like the connection they put between both characters. But once again, all these names I'm telling you guys, these are not the real spirits of the people. These are just everything that's in Flash's head, and they're coming through as the Speed Force ghosts.
Yeah, this is basically the spirit of the Speed Force pulling people out of Barry's memories.
Mm-hmm, and using them against him. So as he sees Wally waiting in the hospital, and Wally's hell is him seeing his mother die over and over and over and over again, repeated just all over 24/7. And that's what Savitar had to deal with, but we don't know what was he seeing over and over again. I feel like by the end of the season, we will definitely find out.
Yeah, we still don't know who Savitar is, so.
No, we don't. Not yet. That's the one villain on this show we don't know series that we don't know yet. We found out who it is in Arrow. I'm still waiting to see who Savitar is. I'm trying to figure out if it's someone Barry knows, or is it just going to be a brand new character? But he's going to open up the door and save Wally, but that's when Captain Cold freezes the door and tells Barry, you're going to have to get through me first, and we cannot let you change places with him. And he says, watch me. Try to stop me. Well, that's what Captain Cold's there for. And they're going back and forth, and honestly, at this point, Captain Cold is getting the best of Barry until he gets some help from Jay Garrick. Now, he comes in, and Barry uses his steel hat to reverse everything thing that he's doing and block it and turn the icicle back at Captain Cold. And Barry gets into the hospital room and they're talking to Wally, letting him know, I'll take you back home. Everything's good. They hug it out and says, your mom's, she's been dead. You don't have to see us again. You don't deserve this. I do. But we're going to have to get out of here. This is when Jay tells him, you know what? Someone needs to take the place of Wally since Wally took the place for Savitar. A speedster has to stay here. So, Jay gives back the hat, gives his hat to Barry, saying, this is the only way you can get back into the real world from what Cisco told me. Cisco contacted me to help you guys since he couldn't hear you anymore. And I'm not as fast as I used to be. You're the only one that can stop this. And with Wally's help, you guys can take him down. I'm not as useful as you guys, so I'll stay here. So Jay gets stuck in the Speed Force until they can figure all of this out. And also, once they get back into the real world, just as HR said, he told Jesse before, you're not the real Flash. And as she told him, punched him out and did what she did, and they both were able to take down Savitar for a short time and find out he has a weakness. This is when she realizes, hey, there's three Flashes here right now. I need to be on Earth 3 where Jay was, since he sacrificed himself. I'll step in where he's at and help him with his city. So that's going to happen. Now, question, Ken. What's going on Earth 2? Is there any speedster there helping anybody, or is that all taken care of since Hunter Zolomon's not there anymore?
Well, that's kind of what I was wondering, too. I mean, who's going to protect Earth 2 right now if she goes to Earth 3?
Right. I was like, okay, guys, I guess you have someone there that can help. Maybe her dad's got enough technology where you can see any bad thing that's happening, take care of it, and call the police. Who knows?
Yeah.
So Wally was a little depressed to see that he just came back from the Speed Force and his girlfriend's leaving to go to a different world, but she'll be back. Don't worry. If Cisco and Gypsy can come back and forth, see each other this much, they'll be okay.
Yeah.
And that's really what happened in this episode. They're still waiting with Savitar. Oh, the show ended on this down note. Well, Iris finally accepts that she wants to be engaged to Barry. And this is when Barry says, you know what? Since all this happened, I don't think we should be together right now. I think we should take a break. You stay here. I'll move in with Cisco. And that's really all we heard. Iris didn't say anything after that. She just looked displeased from all this.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens next episode. Now, was there anything else that happened at the very end of this, or was that what it ended on? I can't remember.
I think that was about it, if I remember right. I'm trying to remember. I saw it at the beginning of the week, so I think that was the end.
Mid-week. I feel like there was something, but then again, I don't think it was, because it was so depressing to see all that happen. We lost Jay, Iris and Barry, they're broken up again. Wally doesn't have his boo on this world anymore. She went somewhere else. Her and HR probably had the best thing happen was him punching her, they found out where each other stand on an even ground, but they still respect each other as friends. As she said, "You're not my father, stop acting like it." But she does trust him to be a very good friend of them.
Yeah.
So that was probably the only good thing that happened. And plus, as we saw all the other people that died over the seasons, they're not really back. They're just ghosts. So, like I said, this episode was pretty dark, pretty gruesome, pretty grim. But it was still a good episode. Probably one of the better episodes, I would say, out of the season.
Yeah, probably. And it's going to be a decent setup for what's coming soon, because we only have a handful of episodes left.
Yeah, how many do we got left? About three?
Give me a minute, I'll look it up. I just had it up, I should have left it up.
I just had mine up too, that's why I'm like, oh, I should have left mine up too. Here, I'm already on it.
Here we go.
You got it, or you want... Oh, list of episodes, there we go. Whoops, wrong link.
I got it right here.
Okay.
This is season 3. This one was episode 17 of 23.
Yeah. So, 20.
No, wait, this was number 16 of 23.
Right. And we only got it 19 episodes.
So we got seven episodes left.
You know, hold on. Yeah, seven episodes, because, yeah, we do have a 23. So, okay, we still got some time. I thought we might have about five left, but okay.
Yeah. Well, the next episode is going to be a lot more fun, because I've seen the trailers for it, and it's basically a straight-up just musical episode. It looks like nobody has superpowers. It's just a singing, dancing musical.
But there are three gangsters in the show.
Yes.
Which were very unexpected. We're supposed to get Stein, Merlin, and who's the other gangster of the city? Is it Joe?
It's a good possibility.
I think it's Joe. Don't quote me on that, but I think Joe's going to be a gangster. So we got three gangsters of the city, but two are heroes, or at least on the side of good, and one's bad. That makes sense. So
yeah,
this is going to be a very interesting episode.
Well, also, the week after that is when we're getting Abracadabra coming to the show, like we talked about last week.
Yeah, now... We've been trying to figure this out. Who's going to be a villain for season 4? I just read somewhere that season 4 will not rely on any speedsters to be his main rival. So I'm trying to figure out who the heck could that be. That could possibly be Abracadabra.
The way they've built all this stuff, they could actually do next season and actually have the Rogues as a whole be the villain and put the team together.
Saying that, I would love for that to work. Let me get Mirror Master back.
Seen Firestorm, we've seen Captain Cold, we've seen Mirror Master, we've seen Trickster, we've got Weather Wizard's been on here. Almost all of the Rogues, the classic Rogues, have been on here at some point.
But how many of them will actually work together? Because I'm more curious about the Legends.
In the comics, they put all of them together.
So do you think we could... I'm just trying to figure out how they get Mick back. Because Mick seemed like he's going to just stay on the Legend team. I could see Captain Cold coming back at this point, since he's not going to be the same Captain Cold we were used to.
Yeah.
So that's my main thing is what about Mick. But I guess he might be able to leave Legends for next season. We'll see what happens with that.
Yeah. So from there, actually, speaking of Mick, we can move on to Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes, this is Apollo 13 mission right here.
Exactly. It was fun to watch.
Yeah, it was. And this one was a pretty sad one, too, which we've been getting. It was still, once again, Legends. Not as dark as Flash, but someone, once again, gets sacrificed. Wait a minute, did anyone get sacrificed on Arrow this week?
I don't remember. I don't think there was any major sacrifices.
No, we'll get into Arrow later, but no, yeah. There's no sacrifices. But there was a sacrifice on Legends. Now, this one takes place, they're going to Apollo 13 mission. But things has changed up from what it was previously in history because of Reverse Flash. The Legends team once again breaks up into different divisions. One's going to go on the mission, one's going to stay on the ship, and a couple of them going to actually be in the main field to make sure everything stays right and normal. I'm sorry, I'm bringing this up a little early. What song was that Stein broke out into? I've heard that on Beetlejuice, but what was
Deo.
The name of that
song? The name of the song is actually Deo, or the Banana Boat
Deo.
Song.
Once he starts singing that, I start laughing and breaking out into singing it with my mom just sitting there for jaw drop laughing like, is this really happening? I'll get into that a little bit later. But at this point, we get some of the Legends team. I forget who all was there for this mission, but it was Ray Palmer, Rip, Vixen, and I think Steel was there, and that was it. Oh, White Canary was too. But when they see old Citizen Steel again, or Commander Steel again, he punches Rip right out. Now, I thought he punched him just because he knows what happened to the rest of his team, and he's been brainwashed, and he's just really upset at him at this point. That's not why. He's upset because he's figuring out, you know what? I've been on this mission for all these years, and I haven't been able to see my family. Because of you, I haven't been able to be with my family, so I'm mad at you, and I don't like what's happening here. But yet, you were able to help your family out. What character told him his family died? I think that was his grandson that told Commander Steele, Rip's family died, so the reason why you're mad at him, you shouldn't be as mad at him. He's already lost everything. At least yours is still alive. So he feels a little bad for hitting him and being mad at him this whole time. But now that they're heading to the moon, and this is the Apollo 13 with Reverse Flash in the ship, very bad. Turns out Commander Steele left the piece of the spear on the flag that got implanted, that they put on the moon. So they're going to have to physically go to the moon, get the piece of the spear back, and come back to Earth. That's the plan. Seems simple, right?
Mm-hmm.
No. Never simple with the Legends. So Reverse Blast knocks out everybody that's on the ship. Adam sneaks on there by shrinking down. But since they're in with zero gravity in outer space, they're floating. Now, here's where Ray is overpowering Reverse Flash. He could technically do damage to the ship, but if he does that and hurts Ray, the whole ship's going to wind up probably blowing up or crashing back into the atmosphere. And that means Reverse Flash is probably going to die too. So at this point, he's not using his powers. So he says, you know what? I'll work with you, Ray, if we can get back to Earth. And, oh, before all this happened, Ray does get on the moon, and he gets the spear back. And this was the best scene in the whole episode. Ray's just geeking out. He's on the moon. He's like, guys, I can see Earth, and I'm on the moon. They're like, well, you need to hurry and get that spear. He's like, guys, wait, let me enjoy this. I'm on the frickin' moon.
Yeah. Well, then, did you see, he did a, he had a, a Matt Damon moment.
Oh, yeah,
Martian.
From Mars.
Yeah, from The Martian, where he sits there and starts doing a talking about being, I'm stuck here on the moon and
I can't get off because what did they damage? Now this is the thing that happened. You got Rip and White Canary going at it back and forth. Sarah and him's arguing, and they forget that was it asteroids hitting them? Did they go into like an asteroid field and they didn't realize it because they were bickering and that's now messing up all the system to the ship. It even goes out for about 5 seconds, I think. And their shields are down. So that means the teleport to get them from outer space onto the ship is disabled. So he's stuck on the moon at this point. So he gets back on the ship for Apollo 13, and this is when him and Reverse Flash start working together. Now, he does not trust him because it's Reverse Flash. He's killed so many of their friends, so many of the people that they know close to them. But as he said, I'm from the 31st century. I know more about everything here than you do. But they can't really trust him. Once he tells him, you know what, if we don't get back to Earth, you're dead, they're dead, I'm dead, you might want to listen to me. And he eventually does. So this is when you get Reverse Flash becoming a bit more human than what we've seen him. He says how he misses the 31st century, he misses working with another great mind, he's missed his fellow scientists. And then this is when Ray says, I'm nothing like you, so don't even try to compare us. He says, well, yeah, we are. You could have made billions of dollars off your suit helping other people like the military, police officers, anyone that's needed the suit. But instead, you took it upon yourself to be selfish and only have it for you because you thought you could do good by saving the world. Now, what's the difference from what I'm doing being selfish and what you did to be selfish? One big thing, one's good, one's bad. But he's trying to say the motive for helping other people slandered because they got selfish and their curiosity is what really did to them. And they had a pretty good bonding moment at one point. He's the only one now that really trusts him enough to listen. No one else on the team would have heard a word he said. But maybe this is because he is a fellow scientist. Well, now since all this crap's happened to the Apollo ship, the people back on Earth are trying to figure out why are they not in contact with us? I think they gave them about an hour or so. If nothing happened, were they going to stop the mission, I think?
Well, there's not much they could do. If the communications didn't come back, there's nothing they could do. They had no response from the vehicle at all. They had no contact with the ship.
And that's not a good look. We're getting a little scared down on Earth. But this is when you get to Professor Stein and Mick, of all people. Have you noticed they started putting Professor Stein and Mick together in these past couple episodes?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. They actually put Mick, Professor Stein, and Jax together, but we still don't get Firestorm when Stein and Jax are together.
Oh, I also wanted to say, since they're supposed to be scientists from England, just so you got, you know, the actor that plays Jax in the show, he is from the UK. He has a British accent. So it was perfect when they said, we're from the UK and this is our team. He starts speaking in his real voice. Yeah. So that was interesting. And then he flipped it right back onto being Firestorm again. But now he's in control of all the systems and security and videos and recordings at the base. So he's trying to delay everything from happening. And they only have a couple more seconds before they can actually get the readings back. And then this is when Stein says, I got to distract people. What could I do? I'll break out in song.
Yeah, just randomly out of nowhere. He's like, Jack tells him, you gotta distract them so they don't look for the telemetry back or anything yet. You got to distract them. Do something that makes them look all the way from the computers. Well, Professor Stein decides to start singing a song. Out of nowhere.
Oh, man, that was funny. Out of nowhere.
And then Mick joins in.
Yes, I was hoping they would have had the whole team of everyone down there in suits just singing. You couldn't have got a better scene than that.
See, that was a teaser. That was a teaser for next week's Flash and Supergirl crossover. And I believe Victor Garber, Professor Stein, is supposed to be in that episode.
Yeah, you're right. I did not even think about that's why they had him sing out of everybody. Oh, wow. Well, that made it even now better. I got to rewatch this episode now. At least that scene.
I don't know if that's why they did that way, but that it's kind of convenient.
Yeah, it's really convenient. That's a pretty good idea. I'm willing to go with you on there. So they do distract him with that. I mean, how could you not be if someone breaks out singing like that? But that happens and everything's okay. This is when we get back to the real ship where the legends are. And this is where they find out Commander Steel, Citizen Steel, and Vixen have their own little confrontation. He wants to bring his father. He wants to have his father be a real father to him. He wants his grandfather to be a father to his father. So by doing that, he's telling Commander Steel, hey, after all this is over, go back and meet your family. You deserve that. I deserve that. We all deserve that because you're the reason why my dad wasn't there for me. We didn't have the best relationship. The reason why I'm screwed up the way I am because you were not there. So if you go back, we'll be a happy family again. This is when Vixen tells him, you do not do that. You do not mess with the timeline. Bad things can happen. Because if it wasn't for you being the man you are, this whole season of the Legends would never have started. Meaning, remember, Arrow came to command. Was it Arrow that came to Citizen Steel in the very beginning of the season, or was it the other way around?
Ollie came to talk to him, I think.
Because he knew his history.
Yeah.
He was like, hey, maybe you can figure out where they are stuck in time. If he would have had a great father, he might have had a different career choice and never would have been the man he is now. So that's why she's telling them, hey, don't mess up anything. Stick to this. And he's getting upset at her, getting frustrated, saying, well, you know what? Ray told me you don't have a good family life either because of what happens when you go back to your timeline. So you tell me changing the timeline isn't a bad thing. And then he finds out he shouldn't have told her that.
Yeah.
But that's when they're still bickering at this point. But we find out that what happened with the ship. Oh, for them to get Ray back on the ship, they're going to have to manually fix the ship. So he's going to have to open up the actual door while they're in outer space to fix this until they release the pressure. Now, if he does that, it'll work and they'll get Ray back, but someone's going to have to do this manually. And that's when Citizen Steel looks around and says, hey, where's my grandfather?
No. That was to, that part there was when they were trying to do reentry under the Earth's atmosphere.
Okay.
They had to decompress the cargo bay to actually adjust their angle of descent.
Okay, you remembered that one a little bit more than I did. But I did forget that also Citizen Steel's father went to the base because he wrote a letter or something.
They had an essay writing contest for someone to actually be in Mission Control, some kid to be in Mission Control while they were landing Apollo 13.
And he rigged it. He did not win this clean. He rigged it for his son to be there so he could see
Commander
him.
Commander Steel set it up so that he could actually see his son. His son isn't allowed to know who he is.
Right. He was planning on at least seeing him one more time. Well, not one more time. At least seeing him. But because he sacrificed himself, that was going to be the last time he would have seen him, and it did not happen. This is when he tells they had a pretty heartwarming moment here. As the door is opening up, Commander Steele's telling him, please don't – or Sister Steele's telling him, please don't do this. We got to see your son. You got to see my father. I want you to be there maybe for me in my life. Don't do this. Don't sacrifice yourself. He's telling them that's what we do as heroes. If someone needs to sacrifice themselves for everyone else, that's what we're here for. If not, we're not heroes. So he got to see how good of a man his grandfather actually was. Now he knows really why he wasn't going to be there for him. It wasn't because he was just off doing something he wanted to do. He felt he had to. And from what we've seen here, he really did have to do this to save everyone else. So he tells him, when we head back to Earth, tell my son that I love him. tell him I would have been there for him, but I just could not do it. And once they get back on Earth, he does tell him that. He tells him, my dad wasn't really there for me. And he says, hey, well, my dad wasn't there for me either. But just because our fathers weren't there for us doesn't mean we have to do the same thing. We can be different. We can be there for our sons and your future son, you know. He really means be there for me, Dad. So, and we'll see how that pans out in the future of Citizen Steel, if it did help, or is his father going to do the same thing because his dad was gone.
Yeah.
Now, but we do get
the tally. Go ahead. Wait, finish up the show.
I was just saying, this is when we get Reverse Flash and Adam coming back to Earth. Now, once they get back to Earth, you know Reverse Flash is already like, oh, good, we're on the atmosphere, and time for me to be bad again. Well, Ray has something up his sleeve. He's like, nope, I'm pulling out this gun on you, and we're going into the prison. And that happens for a while, but then he's like, oh, yeah, he can go through walls. I have another gun for him. This is a Speed Force gun that they made. And the funny thing is, who made it for them? Wasn't it Rip that was using the gun, and the person that made it for Rip was Professor Zoom. So he's like, oh, this is ironic that you're pulling this gun out on me. And he's like, well, I know why you're trying to get out now. You're not trying to kill us, but you are going to try to get that spear. But I also know that there's a speed ghost chasing you. So if I hold this gun on you and waste time, oh, look at that. It's coming for you already, isn't it? Well, you don't have time to take the spear. You need to get out here to save your life.
Yeah.
And he tells him, clever, Ray. Very clever. I didn't think you had it in you. But we'll meet each other again. So I think him and Ray have a new respect for each other. He'll probably still kill him whenever he gets a chance, but at least he respects him a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing, the tally now, it looks like the Legends have all but one section of the spear, don't they? Because I think the Legion of Doom still has one piece of the spear.
Yeah.
I think.
So I think it's one. It might be more, but after Rip came back and they got I know they have two. So we'll see what pans out from them getting the other one back, if they will, if it'll get destroyed and they have to do it a completely different way. We don't know yet. But the Legends so far are winning. They're beating the Legion of Doom right now. Oh, and also the funny thing is, none of the Legion members like each other. And we found a little bit more of that out in this one. As he said, oh, Disney, you and your band of misfits in the Legion always buddy-buddy, why are you trying to be friends with me? As he said, they're not scientists like I am. I'm come from the future. I know more stuff, but the closest person to that is actually you. He enjoys working with Ray Bear, and he does his own team. And at the very end of this episode, Citizen Steel and Vixen get over everything, and they're like, hey, sorry, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have told you or even mentioned anything to you about your family in the future. I know I can lead to bad things. And then she says, well, I understand where you were coming from, but you've seen how good man your grandfather was. And they're on even ground now. But once he heads out the room, Vixen asks Gideon what does happen to her family in the future. Gideon warns her, whenever somebody looks into their future, it's never good. But she says, I know, do it anyway. Now, she may be one of the few people that looks into the future and doesn't try to change anything. She's just going to keep doing what she does day to day. Or we could see the new Vixen not being here because of her, which I kind of doubt because we have the CW Seed show.
Yeah.
But as I was telling my mom, I don't know if I mentioned this on the show, who's to say that Citizen Steel isn't related to our Vixen in our generation? Who's to say he's not an ancestor of her?
He could be her grandfather.
Yeah, they never mentioned that. So they could still have a relationship. That's one reason why he doesn't want to have any more contact with Vixen, because he's afraid of that ruining their lives in the future. But we don't know. You know how time travel works. It's a weird thing, but it can go that way. But that was really all that happened in Legends for this week.
Yeah. And then the big week was actually Arrow this week, because Arrow felt like a season finale.
It did.
But
it
we
really
still
did.
Have a couple of, we still have, once again, more episodes after this.
Yeah, and did you want to go over this one? I have some questions of some stuff, but this started out, I felt like a Batman movie, or is that just me?
Kind of. Well, Arrow, a lot of it feels like Batman.
True.
So, but we start off with Arrow finally finding out, he goes to some monastery way out in the Himalayas and finds, it looks like the League of Assassins training, but here it's not. This is actually Talia's school.
Yeah.
So,
This reminds me a little bit of the video game, too.
Yeah. But Talia's students try to take him out because he just walks in randomly. So he takes out all the students and she tells him to stop. And he finds out that Prometheus was trained by her. Now, he had figured this out last week, remember, because there was one move that he did that was like one of Talia's signature moves.
Yeah, and that tipped him off like, if she taught him, maybe if I go there and ask her who he is, she'll let me know.
So she's she tells him it's Adrian Chase, the DA. And then he's trying to figure out why would she help him, Prometheus, to destroy Oliver. And then she tells him straight up, because he wanted to destroy you because you killed his father, and I know what that feels like. Here to this point, they hadn't told us, and no one knew that Ali still didn't know Talia's last name.
Yeah, this whole time.
So he did not know she was Ra's al Ghul's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So now he does, and he makes his way back to Star City, and now that he knows the whole time, now it's like now the actor that plays Chase did a great episode, because he knows that Oliver knows. Mm-hmm. But Oliver can't say anything.
And he's just going about his day-to-day life at the job, just sitting back in a chair. He's like, oh, Oliver, I didn't think you were going to make it today.
Yeah.
Just and casually, oh, you went to the Himalayas? Oh, okay, whatever. You can't say nothing, though, so if you do anything that looks a little weird, it's going to come back on you. I'm keeping my cool while you're all frustrated.
The main reason he can't say anything about this is because Adrian, remember at the end of last episode, kidnapped Oliver's girlfriend.
Mm-hmm. And the reporter, Susan Williams.
So he has her in an undisclosed location, so Oliver can't do anything if he wants Susan to survive. So the whole episode, you get Team Arrow trying to find Susan.
And also, you get a little, once again, a more dark side from Felicity in this episode.
Oh, yeah. She works more with Helix, trying to get them to help find Susan. But they want a little bit of help from Felicity also. They have her hack a Homeland Security server for some reason.
Yeah, this is a give-and-take relationship. You help me, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. And as they said, they already helped her two times, and people around the corporation are beginning to notice. I forget the girl's name. I call her Felicity, too.
Yeah.
She's saying how everyone's beginning to notice she keeps helping her, and Felicity's not doing anything, so this is the last time I can help you. She's like, well, what am I supposed to do? Well, I have something you could do for us if you want, don't mind. And that's when she starts hacking codes of security surveillance for drones around. Did they say where the drones were?
I don't think so. I know it was Homeland Security, so it's somewhere here in the U.S.
I'm wondering how is this going to play a part later on in the season, or just, hey, this random home security one you to crack?
Oh, no.
Or
did
this actually mean
this? Them actually announcing that it was part of Homeland Security means they're going to later on this show they'll actually figure out or they'll do something with this.
Well, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah. But we do end up towards the end of the show. You have Prometheus versus Arrow. They do find where Susan's at, and you get the showdown because the two, they know who each other are. So, but they save Susan. The problem is, once they do that, Prometheus takes Ali as a prisoner. I believe. Wasn't that the end of the show?
Took him as a prisoner?
Yeah.
Wow. Yes, he did.
So, until this point, though, you get the showdown between Prometheus and Arrow and all these things that feel like the season finale. Then, in the end, Ali is taken prisoner by Adrian Chase.
Yeah.
It sets up the final arc of the show season.
Yeah, well, the twister here was Prometheus has been, 10 steps ahead of you every time?
Yes,
Ali,
every time, no matter what.
Yeah, so no matter what they could do, Prometheus has been making them look like fools at this point.
Yeah.
But this is when Green Arrow says, Ollie says to himself, you know what? Prometheus is ruthless. He's cold, he's calculated, and he is literally always 10 steps ahead of me. There's no way I can stop him. Wait a minute, let me start thinking like this guy. What could I do to make him feel like us? This is when Diggle tells him, Ollie, we're your strength. And that's the difference he doesn't have. He doesn't have family and friends. He's like, no, you guys were my strength. You're my weakness now. And then Diggle brought up something else about family and friends, and this is when Ollie starts thinking, wait a minute, Adrian does have family. He has a wife.
Exactly.
So they bring his wife into all this, and he's like, wait a minute, honey, you're not supposed to be. And he keeps saying this. He says, you're not supposed to be here. You're not supposed to be here. And as he's saying that in my head, Ken, I'm thinking to myself, okay, this guy's killed so-and-so. This guy's killed so-and-so. He's betrayed so-and-so. He's hurt so-and-so. He really doesn't have a heart, honestly, at this point.
Yeah.
So what makes you think you guys bring his wife into this, he's not going to try to kill her because, he doesn't care about anybody? So she gets close to him. They get all lovey-dovey. She's like, oh, honey, we can fix this. You became a monster, but it's okay. I still love... Stamp.
Yeah.
There's a knife, bloody knife that falls to the ground. I'm like, you guys did not see that coming. Seriously? He's evil. He's a bad guy. He doesn't care about anybody. So the only reason he kept saying she should not be there is because he's like, well, now she knows who I am. I'm going to have to kill her. I really didn't want to, but I'm selfish, so bye, honey. And she does wind up dying at the end of the episode. And then this is when now Adrian has one more thing on Arrow. He's like, huh, it's funny that Arrow was here in this place at this time and my wife is dead. Don't you guys know that Green Arrow's going to be in trouble for murder for killing my wife? So it's like, oh, wow, now you're pinning the murder of your wife that you did on Green Arrow again.
Yeah.
And he also put the I keep wanting to say commissioner, but the chief in the hospital. He stabs him outside of the police office, and he dressed up as a hooded villain once again, just a hooded homeless guy, and they could not see his face from any of the cameras.
Yeah, because so, Felicity actually found all the or had all the evidence that proved Chase was Prometheus, and Ollie gave as the mayor gave it to the police captain and said, "Look through this as a favor to me." So as he gets all this information, he walks out and gets stabbed. Now he's in a coma. The one guy that could actually help them
is in a coma. And then the other woman that could actually help and vouch for them is dead. Mm-hmm. And now Ollie's being held captive by Talia and Adrian Chase. Well, I don't think he's being held by Talia anymore, but she did say, I got him here. I don't like him. He killed my father. Even though he did evil things that wasn't in my intentions, that's why I left. He was still my father, so torture him, make him suffer, kill him, get rid of him. I don't care about him no more. So that's what the episode ends on. We know Ollie's going to get out at some point, but how is he going to get out? And who else is going to die in this process?
The next big question, though, we know who everybody is except for one person. Who the heck is Vigilante?
Yeah. Because we were thinking it was...
in the comic books, Vigilante is Adrian Chase.
And I was thinking to myself, he could still be both of them, but after that fight scene, I forgot they had on the roof. There's no way. So... Yeah.
So let me look up the DC Wiki again, but I believe, because we found that out at the beginning of the show.
Well, this is my question I had from watching this whole episode. Now, as we said, guys, this felt like a season finale. You had all the characters back here. But where the heck is Artemis?
Exactly. That's another character that's out in the wind right now. And remember, Rory's still out in the wind, Ragman. Now, the Rags are supposedly dead, but is there a chance of him coming back at some point?
Yeah, well, that made sense. We just saw his rags get kind of kaput in the last episode, so that's fine. But now it's like, well, Artemis played a big part of this, and we haven't seen her since all this went down. So is she coming back? Is she not coming back?
Yeah, in the real quick, in the comic books, the name Vigilante was also used by Adrian Chase, a lawyer turned deadly antihero, when he begins to take the law into his own hands. That was back in 1941. Or wait a minute. I'm not sure. The first appearance as Vigilante of Adrian Chase was from 1983 in the New Teen Titans Annual Number 2.
Okay.
So, yeah, Adrian Chase was the Vigilante starting in the 80s, and he was a lawyer.
So
they flipped it somehow. I have no idea what they're doing with this.
And my dog just walked right back into my room. Hey, niece. There you go. Watch out. I have, like, my action figures laid up somewhere. She just jumps right on them. Be careful. Yeah. But, okay, so if that's Adrian, who could this be?
I don't know.
Has there been anybody else in the season that we've seen thus far that might be having a Vigilante problem going on here? Maybe a family died?
It'd be interesting if it was actually nobody we know yet at all. I doubt that, but it could be.
Well, we'll find out. We might not find out, actually. This could be something to wait to play up till next season.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is one thing, a little bit of Arrow news that I found upcoming. Now, you remember... You remember the nearly indestructible supervillain played by named Derek Sampson, who was a drug dealer that was selling Stardust? Remember Cody Rhodes' character? Cody Rhodes is actually returning in episode 21 of Arrow this season.
So you think it could be Cody?
Huh?
Think it'd be Cody?
I doubt it, but he is returning to the series in episode 21 to play the same drug dealer.
Okay, never mind. If he's still a drug dealer, then that's not going to be him. As you said, this could be a brand new character we're getting.
Exactly. So that's most of the TV news. Was there anything else in TV news from this week?
As I said to you earlier, Ken, there was some news about Black Lightning coming out, but it was really just
repackaging of what we already know.
Yeah, so not really too much on news, at least not that I could find earlier. So
yeah.
Well, yeah, I can look it up while we're talking and be like, hey, I found something, but that I know of, nope.
Yeah. Well, we got plenty of other stuff we still have to get to here, and a lot of these are real quick snippets. But we got some cinematic news next, and you had the first one on here, don't you?
Yep. This is about the Batman movie. We don't have a release date, but we do know it is going to be released in 2018 of next year. Or they're going to
No, they're going to shoot it in 2018.
So the movie will probably come out, as DC predicted, they said probably 2020. The movie will come out. It might come out in 2019, but probably 2020. The way, especially, it seems like how they push their movies back right now, which is okay. I'm fine with the pushing back. Make sure everything's right before you give us half-butt movie here.
Yeah.
So it probably will come out in 2020. But after recent setbacks regarding a long-awaited The Batman film, they finally got themselves a production start date of 2018. After Affleck stepped down as director and they got in Matt Reeves, not much mention has been said about the script itself for some rewrites and slight rumors, but we do have a pretty solid idea of when we'll start shooting. And this is when Twitter came up, and this is kind of just a rehash now of what we already heard from Manganiello about his role and what he thought about Ben Affleck directing.
Yeah.
So that's really it. We just know now 2018 is going to be when they start shooting, and I'm just predicting 2020 is when we're going to get the movie.
Probably. There's another one in release news for the Justice League movies that are coming. Aquaman actually had some news. Warner Brothers has pushed the release date back 2 months. Now, originally it was supposed to be October 5th, 2018, but it looks like now they're looking for December 21st, 2018, according to Hollywood Reporter.
Did they say why?
Yeah, there's no reason for the change as far as we know, but that same day, the 21st, was supposed to be the original date for Avatar 2, which Cameron actually recently announced is being pushed back also, but a lot of places have also pointed out that the December 21st date for 2018 is supposed to be the actual release date for Sony's Spider-Man animated movie, which with Miles Morales is supposed to be that day also. No one knows why Aquaman got pushed back. Now, more than likely, it's just because it looks like it's going to take a little longer than they're expecting.
Mm-hmm.
But, it got moved back to December.
Okay.
So, the other big piece of cinematic news is we got a third Wonder Woman trailer this past weekend.
Yes, we did, and this has been the talk of the whole week, really.
Oh, yeah. There's been some awesome stuff, and this trailer looks great.
It does.
They're calling it the origin trailer because it's basically telling the origin story of Wonder Woman. It doesn't show a whole lot of the actual story of the movie, but it shows a lot of Themyscira and her training as she's growing up.
Yeah, this we finally got to see the kid version of Diana Prince. As somebody said on Instagram, they were like, hey, now we finally got the trendy as kids if we don't want to make a movie about them.
Yeah, actually, we get to see two young Diana Princes because you see her as what? Probably a 5 or 6 year old to start with?
Mm-hmm.
Then you see her in her early teens.
Yep.
And then we see a lot of training. She gets and actually, I don't think that's her mother. That they're showing is Hippolyta. I think it's Hippolyta. Is showing her
at the very beginning.
Yeah, through the treasury.
But the one that's training her is how do they pronounce her name?
I don't know. I'm not great with Greek names.
I'm not either. I'm probably going to mess this up. You guys hear this, correct me. Felipe and Artemis were training her, and we got to see that. And they're training her, she puts her bracelets together, and this is when Kim was saying this is when the god part comes out of her.
Yeah, they're playing up the demigod part of Wonder Woman.
Mm-hmm. And this is showing how strong she actually is compared to everyone. This is in the trailer, they say she finally finds out what she really is.
Yeah. Well, and they also show later on in World War I when she takes and flips a tank with her bare hands.
Yeah, like it was nothing. You know, I'm just lifting the tank. No problem here, guys.
Just like you're flipping a book.
Like it just wasn't nothing.
You do get Diana very young being shown the weapons that are in the treasury or the vault of the Amazons. The sword, the shield, the armor, and the bracers, and the lasso. All that are being held in this vault-type armory.
And I didn't know that also we found on the trailer, Dr. Poison is going to play a part. Now, I don't know what big of a part it's going to be, but she's going to be pretty dangerous.
Yeah, this is a character from the 1940s Wonder Woman.
Yeah, this whole theme of this Wonder Woman movie feels like this taking it from her time when she first was introduced to comic book fans.
Yeah.
It's not going to be what we've seen in recent books, which I think is great. Give us some more time and plan out for future movies. If we're going to start somewhere back in the 40s, why not make this a time period where in the comic books it took place actually in the 40s?
Mm-hmm. And the only thing I thought that was a little weird with this trailer was the very end when they show the Wonder Woman logo, they actually play the new Wonder Woman theme from Batman v Superman. But it kind of doesn't fit with the rest of the music, because the rest of the music in the trailer is classical adventure music, but it's all orchestrated and stuff. Then you get what is almost a heavy metal theme, which is the Wonder Woman theme.
Yeah, and now I see what you're talking about. Earlier, I didn't really understand what you meant. Yeah, I see what you're saying. It should have been a little bit more classical. I feel like this theme music maybe should be made for a later movie in our time.
Yeah.
But I think this is her theme music, and this is the, like I said, the theme music I heard from here is what made me so hyped to see this movie, because when I seen that happen in Batman Dawn Justice, she came out for S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm like, oh man, this is getting me hyped. I love this. I love this Wonder Woman. So I'm still glad they played that. Yeah, got me hyped, but it didn't fit this trailer like it did the first one. But this is, I guess, going to be her theme song for the rest of the film series.
Well, you never know. They may actually change that up and actually play that same theme, but do it orchestrated a little differently.
Possibly. And they might be trying to keep that away from us until we get the actual soundtrack for this film like they usually do. Speaking of that, do we know who's even doing the soundtrack yet?
I can look up the IMDb real quick and see if there's anybody credited.
I don't see anything as of thus far right now. I'm on there.
Yeah.
Development. For music, I don't see anything yet. We'll probably get that once the film actually comes out.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll get it within the next couple of months at least.
Oh, yeah, because don't they usually release the soundtrack, like, what, a week before the movie comes out?
Something like that.
Or they do it that Tuesday, and the movie comes out Friday or Thursday night, so. But we'll get it.
Yeah,
I hope this gets the soundtrack.
The other way to check this would be go in the other direction. Give me just a second.
The other direction.
Let me look at Amazon and see if they have a listing for the Wonder Woman soundtrack. Because you may be able to pre-order the soundtrack, and it'll say who actually does it. Yeah, the Wonder Woman main theme, no, that's not it. Yeah, there's no listing for the Wonder Woman soundtrack. Well, Wonder Woman motion picture soundtrack. No, they don't have a listing for the actual soundtrack. So they don't have anything there. The other one would be the, let me do a quick Google search.
And I wonder who's going to be actually doing the music for all of it. Is it going to be consistent? Or
it could
have
be Hans Zimmer, because he did
that's what
he did that, the other couple movies.
Yeah, so, well, let's see this too. Start music by Rob Gleach and Rupert Gregerson Williams. So
here
that's
we go.
All we know.
Well, oh, you found one that says who it was?
Yeah, and it's not Zimmer, sadly. I like Zimmer. I love Zimmer.
Yeah.
Nope.
No, everything here I'm seeing is all, wow, that's weird, because usually at this point they've announced who's doing the music and everything else.
Right. Not yet. Not yet. But the movie's going to come out pretty soon. We got, what, about 3 months? Yeah.
Yeah.
About 3 months until the movie comes out. So we can wait.
Now, here we go. Who is doing the Wonder Woman soundtrack? Listen to Wonder Woman. Wow, this is scoring themes from Aquaman and Wonder Woman. That is weird that they've not actually announced who it is. Does the wiki have it? Oh, it does have it here. It's Rupert Gregson Williams, who I'm looking to see if there's any other big names. Princess of Thieves, I've never heard of. A lot of it looks like B-movies and stuff. He did Click, Over the Hedge, I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry, the B-movie, Maid of Honor, Don't Mess with the Zohan, Grown-Ups, Zookeeper. There's a lot of stuff he's done that are stuff you would have heard of, but nothing that really fits in with Wonder Woman. He did The Legend of Tarzan, which was actually a really good movie. That's really the only action one. All the rest is a lot of comedy and things like that.
Well,
so it's going to be interesting.
That's odd. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe because the theme of the movie is not going to supposed to be as serious as The Dark Knight, or not Dark Knight, Batman vs. Superman, so maybe they want to go a different route with even the music.
Probably. But, we're looking forward to Wonder Woman is going to be a good movie either way, I think. Then I think DC movies are maybe finally moving in a good direction.
Hmm. I think so, too. And I didn't know that the director, what's her name, Patty Jenkins, she was born at an Air Force base. So I guess her father or mother had some relations to the military.
Huh, cool.
Hmm. Yeah, she lived in 15 different countries. Oh, wow, before she even six. So she's got a little bit of a fighting background. I'm pretty sure somewhere someone had to teach her how to stand up for herself, so...
Oh yeah,
I'm glad. Like I said before, I'm glad a female's actually making a Wonder Woman movie, and this is going to be her fifth film she actually made. But I'm ready for this to come out. I can't wait. I was hoping it came out this month earlier, but it got pushed back, and we can't wait for this. This is going to be something I got pre-order tickets for.
Oh yeah, definitely. Next up, though, we actually have a couple of gaming newses.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is more up my line, because I've been a Magic the Gathering player for years. I've played ever since, like, 1995. I don't play as much as I used to, but I still enjoy sitting down to play a game. And we're getting a Justice League trading card game. Now it says this came from comicbook.com. The icons of DC Comics are arguably the most, well, I'm not going to read the whole thing here, but coming out of here, Panini America announced that a new trading card at the trading game at the Gamma Trade Show called the Meta X Justice League Trading Card Game. The debut set will include over 250 cards, all of which will feature art inspired by the New 52 era DC Comics. And then the Meta X part of the equation is linked to the fighting system employed in the game, which stands for X Over, and will grow to encompass other licenses, much like the Universal fighting system now employed by Jazzco Games. Now, trading card companies have tried to do this multiple times. Back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was a series, I forget what the system was called, but they did a Hercules set, a Xena set, and then X-23, which I believe was from another comic company. But they all used the same trading card system and rule set so that you could actually swap the cards back and forth if you wanted.
Okay.
So they said the goal is to make the system easy for first-time players, with players taking no more than 5 minutes to be able to actually pick up the core mechanics and play the game. Now, more information is going to be available at San Diego Comic-Con, and it'll actually be sold in starter and booster sets, which is standard for this type of game. More comics properties in the trading card game business, well, that's more about stuff like that, but this looks interesting. Let's see if they actually have a release date. It looks like Justice League, well, the Justice League movie we know goes into theaters on November 17th, but we don't have any date. Until we get to Comic-Con, looks like we're not going to hear anything about when they're actually going to put this out.
So you think it might come out summer, this year maybe?
If they're announcing it now, they may be doing this and trying to hit the release date to go coincide with the release of the Justice League movie, maybe.
Okay. That would make sense.
So, Well, they said here it's a little bit of a disappointment that Panini didn't use the Rebirth era as the base for their game, as opposed to the mixed reviews of the New 52, but maybe the first expansion set will actually be, or maybe the game will be successful enough that we'll actually get a Rebirth expansion set.
We might reset the universe a little bit. Set. I mean, like me and you said, they're still pumping out stuff in the animated world of the New 52 verse.
Yeah.
So, we still got some time, I think, so we can get away from that. I go about probably a good 2 to 3 more years before we get completely out of that phase with anything else except for comic books, and then we'll get back to what we're dealing with right now.
But we actually got even more news from Injustice.
Yes, we do. We got a new character. I think this is all the characters that's revealed now, guys. We got all of them, at least except for DLCs, which they're not saying yet. Keep that more of a secret. I'd like to see that stay hush-hush. But they've been pumping out characters every week or every other week for somebody new. And in this trailer, we also got to confirm the Green Arrow's coming back. Ollie will be back, and I'm glad they put him in there. That's actually one of my favorite characters to use from the first game. So if they didn't put him in there, I had to learn someone new.
Well, they got Catwoman, too. I'm actually watching the trailer while you're talking about it.
Okay. Yeah, we got Green Arrow in here, but this was Firestorm's trailer. He's new. There's not really any character I can compare him to. I can compare his super move set to maybe something out of Scorpion from Mortal Kombat, but it's still different. It's just a set. But in this trailer, we also got some fighting stages. I want to say I think this is the Batcave and Arkham Asylum. It looks
possibly
like it's a jail cell. It might be Blackgate, but more than likely it's going to be Arkham. And I don't know how many fight stages they have now. Before it was, you have one stage, you go, or you have one fighting stage, you go to another sequence, then you go to another sequence, then another sequence. This, they look like they're underground, and Killer Croc is in the sewer, and he grabs Catwoman. So, like I said, I'm assuming this is Arkham. And even if there's computers in there, like we had in the Arkham games, Batman had a Batcave in Arkham. So I think this whole thing was taking place actually in Arkham for Firestorm. But you get to see Firestorm use his blue flames. You get to see Firestorm use his regular red flames. And also, this is not the normal Firestorm we're used to. It's not the first Firestorm. This is Jack's Firestorm.
Yeah.
And I'm not surprised, like I said there, I think they're going off this from the TV show and the popularity that he's making.
Well, in the comic books, towards the end of Fire, they've not brought him back for the New 52 yet, But or not for the New 52, but for not brought him back for Rebirth yet. But the New 52 Firestorm was Jason Roush and Ronnie Raymond.
Right, and I like that they mixed both of them together. I just felt like now I can have both of the I can best have the best of both worlds. So yeah. I was hoping they would do that here, which they could. We don't know really which this is going to, but we just know that this is Jax. I don't know who's on the inside of him talking, but this trailer revealed pretty good amount for Firestorm.
Yeah.
So that's new with Injustice, and it also put a little bit more in the story. It seems since Green Arrow is back, he did die in the first game. So I'm trying to figure out, is this going to take place before, after, or is he from our world and not the world that was inhabited by Superman, which he killed off? So
okay.
They haven't revealed any of that yet, and I want them to keep that hush-hush. Don't put that out yet. Just give us the characters and we know what we're dealing with.
Well, Luke, it's interesting that in this, though, it looks like Firestorm, they're treating him as a straight fire-based character.
And yeah.
not a nuclear-based character with transmutation and stuff.
Yeah, and that's why I said there's not really a character I can say they look like they pulled him from, except for Scorpion, because of the fire element.
Yeah.
Now, he doesn't fight like him, but all you get to see is flame. So, I don't know. I wish they could have put more elemental stuff in there. And that's why I didn't like his cutscene. His cutscene's really, like I told Ken, looks like he goes to hell or something.
Yeah.
And he puts the guy on the ground, picks him back up, and then you see his two atom flames, the logo of his atoms, come together, smash him, and he's back to being where you just were. It felt like they kind of didn't put as much effort, I don't think, into Firestorm.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting as you watch this, and he almost reminds me of, like, a Human Torch from Marvel.
Yeah. I'll go with that. I didn't think of it, but that's actually a perfect description of him.
Yeah. So.
So.
I think we have one more piece of news after that, and this one's a bummer.
Yeah, we lost another artist in the comic book world. Bernie Wrightson passed away yesterday, actually, on March 18th, as we're recording this. Legendary artist Bernie Wrightson passed away on March 18th at the age of 68 after a long, long battle with brain cancer, according to the post from his wife, Liz, on Facebook. He had announced his retirement from creating new art in January, owing to the compilations of his recent surgeries. Wrightson was best known for his great horror artists in comics history. He's one of the best ones to ever do it. And he's a co-creator of Swamp Thing.
I knew that Wrightson, when I found this story, dude, I knew that one would tug on your heartstrings, being Swamp Thing one of your favorite characters.
What also hurt me, I'm going to finish reading the article and I'll get back to what really got me here.
Yeah.
But he also did the drawings for Frankenstein in 1970 and 1980. And he also was used in the Marvel Comics' first illustration of the novel Frankenstein in 1983. A 25th anniversary edition of the illustrated novel was published by Dark Horse in 2008. And he also was known for several movies, including Heavy Metal and The Creepshow.
Yeah.
But the thing that really got me was Marvel recently just put out Swamp Thing. Man Thing. They put out they put out Man Thing with R.L. Stein, and I haven't bought a Marvel title. Man, it's been a couple of years. But when I saw that, R.L. Stein's one of my childhood horror novel guy, so I picked it up and I was thinking to myself, I'm sorry this guy passed away, because I always thought to myself, wouldn't it be nice if we had a artist from Swamp Thing with a writer writing for Marvel come together to make a horror novel, or at least a graphic novel. And he was one of the guys that I think would have been great for it, but I didn't know he was suffering from all this, and now he's gone. So that was a bit of a bummer for me. That was, like, the idea I had for that. I would love to see him as a fan. But his art will live on in legacy. As we said, he also has a novel out in 2008 of Dark Horse for Frankenstein. So a lot of his art's still out there, and you guys can see it. If you don't know about him, check him out. He's got a long list of art projects he's done. He's worked for Marvel, from DC, and everything else in between.
And yeah, if you look on the wiki page for Bernie Wrightson, he did either covers or the actual art for he did Aquaman, Batman. He has some Lantern.
He did a lot of Batman. There was several different books he did for Batman.
Yeah, he's done some JLA. He did a lot of Swamp Thing back in the day. A lot of the horror anthology stories, like the House of Mystery, House of Secrets, the Secrets of the Haunted House, He was all over the place. Weird Tales of Mystery.
He even wrote for Jonah Hex.
Yeah. So, and then at Marvel, he even did stuff like Astonishing Tales. He wrote for the original Captain, the interiors for Captain Marvel 41 and 42 back in 75 and 76. Chamber of Darkness, Hellraiser. He did some Conan. He's done Punisher. He's done
Werewolf by Night, if that rings a bell to anybody. Yeah. Tomb of Dracula, Tower of Shadows. Like we say, he did a lot of horror-based things.
In the 70s and 80s, he looks like he was basically their go-to artist for horror comics.
Mm-hmm.
So
he will be missed. He will be missed.
He's definitely a legend in the comic book industry.
Oh, yeah, and if there's any artist out there that's like to do the creepy stuff that we've seen in comic books, he would be one of the founders of that.
Oh, yeah. So, but that ends the news stories for us. Now we need to get into a little bit of the comic reviews. And I think I'm going to start with the... over here with the first two. We're going to do just a quick overview of them because there wasn't anything super huge that happens in them, but they kind of go together in a weird way. You'll find out in a minute. I'm going to start with Flash number 18. And in this one, we get a flashback, or Wally, Kid Flash Wally, having a dream about his uncle, who we found out is actually his dad, coming over to see him, who morphs into the Reverse Flash and how he's a killer. And then, which causes Wally to wake up in super speed and smash into a wall because he was having a nightmare. And so you find out he's been having nightmares off and on. Then we move on to Iris and Wally going with Barry to see his dad. And then talking back and forth about that. And then we finally find out the final of this story is Flash finds out that Wally broke into Iron Heights to go talk to his dad and try to clear the air a little bit, I guess. And the last issue, and remember, he found out his dad's not there. He's been transferred to a place called Belle Rev in Louisiana, which rings some bells with Flash, considering he just got done working with the Suicide Squad a couple of months ago.
They had a very big event.
So Flash just says, okay, well, we'll go and check out Belle Rev. But he's like, you have to follow my lead, or else we may not walk out of this place.
Yeah, there's some dangerous people in there, and the guards do not take kindly to trespassers.
Exactly.
They will shoot you.
So they break in and start looking, and they get caught by... They basically just get caught by Belle Rev. And then who walks out but Amanda Waller. Didn't she die at the end of Justice League versus Suicide Squad?
No, she died at the end of issue 12 of Suicide Squad.
Well, yeah, but that was the tie-in for Justice League Suicide Squad, wasn't it? That was the prologue, the end of it, I thought.
This was all after what happened with the Justice League vs. Suicide Squad. This is when they became buddy-buddy, and now things are happening in the Suicide Squad to break them up, which we'll find out a little bit more once we get there.
Amanda Waller's there, and she tells them straight up, Flash tells her, no, I'm looking for Daniel. Daniel, he supposedly was transferred here, and she says straight up, he has never been in this place. And actually, I should put you in jail for breaking into here, but since I kind of owe you guys a favor, I'm going to let you leave as long as you just don't come back.
As long as you don't come back.
Yeah. So, and then, of course, Wally is thinking that Amanda, or she's got to be lying. She has to be. And Wally says, well, I have an idea. If Daniel was ever in Belle Rev, I know someone to ask. Then we get to Australia in the outback, and you find Captain Boomerang sitting in a bar, doing what Captain Boomerang does, running his mouth and getting into a bar fight. So, and then Flash and Kid Flash break it up, and they start talking to him and tell him, Digger, I need a hand. We need to figure this out. And as they're talking to him, all of a sudden, they get caught in some kind of an energy net, and these two guys have captured them, and it's the Weaver Clan's web. Weaver clan is who's just captured them, and now he says, now let's cut them up and sell the parts.
Man.
So we find out about the world's worst team-up after this.
The world's worst team-up.
Yes. So, but the interesting thing here is it actually has Amanda Waller as being alive, and you actually wanted to talk about Suicide Squad number 13.
Yeah, Amanda Waller being alive, in the Suicide Squad issue 12, she died at the end of it. So now in 13, this is where the team starts to... disassemble right here, because ever since that happened, Harley's a little mad at Deadshot. She thinks Deadshot killed him. This is where the book first opens up, with Rick Flag and Katana being held captive by who is this right here? Rustam. He's trying to tell him because he dealt with what exactly Rick Flag is going through. And Katana is going to be his right-hand girl on this one. So she's there too. And she has a sword. He's got a sword. He respects them a little bit more than anyone else on the team. Then we get in here with Harley Quinn smashing Deadshot with her big mallet. And you got Deadshot, Killer Croc. They're all trying to break this up. And like, if we do break it up, I'll probably wind up eating him, is what Croc says. And as they're just going through it, Rustam's telling them. Now, if you guys remember at the very first beginning of this Rebirth saga of the Suicide Squad, Rick Flag was in prison. Amanda Waugh came to him and said, hey, if you work for a Suicide Squad, I'll let you out and you can command them. You won't be treated as much of a criminal as they are. But they need somebody's guidance. Turns out, Rustam is telling her, you can never trust Amanda Waller. Whatever reason you think she should, don't. She put you in jail just so she could bribe you and get you out to trick you into working for her. So she's been setting him up since the beginning. And they really are trying to figure out who would kill Waller. I know she's mean and she's bad and everything, but she was our ticket out of here. Why would you kill her? And Deadshot's like, I didn't do it, but hey, I got offered something to get out with my daughter. And we can have a good time. She won't. She'll be able to see her father, and I'll be free. So he starts shooting up Captain Boomerang. He punches Harley in the face, and he starts killing all the guards there, and he gets out. He's basically making himself look like the bad guy. He's making himself look like the person that killed Waller. But in his head, all he's thinking is, Waller's taken down. I can get out now. Even though they have the other woman in charge, she's no Waller. So he gets out. He breaks out of jail, and Rustam is going to try to have Katana and Rick Flag work with him because he's saying, "I will give you the real freedom you need." And with the way your team's looking, you don't really have a team anyway. Now, the best part of this happens. They split this up into two stories. After everything happened at Bell Rev and everyone got out, the Suicide Squad is really free at this point. So Harley goes to the swamp in Louisiana and goes to the bar, and you got Captain Boomerang, Hack, Killer Croc and Enchantress all together, and they're talking about what will they do after they get out of here. Boomerang's like, I guess I'll do the same thing I've been doing. Hack's gonna try to figure out what she needs to be in life because she doesn't know if she wants to be a hero or a villain. Then you have Killer Croc and Enchantress saying they'll probably get an apartment somewhere, and he'll eat the dogs and the stray cats, so he'll have food, and we don't have to worry about feeding them because that's gonna be his food. And then this is when you get Hack and Harley talking to each other. She's saying, I guess I can try to be like you, be a big baddie. And she's like, listen here, Hack, I'm a big baddie. You're good people. You've worked with the team, but you're no villain, honey. You're definitely a hero, clearly. So she cries. She gets some tears in her eye of joy. She goes into like this hologram mode and goes back to Bell Rev to be a hero. She's trying to figure out who really lit all of them out. Who's the one that hacked our systems? And then this is where, Hardcore comes in and says, so you came back, and Hack's saying, I knew it was you. You were the one that probably betrayed all of us. And she says, you're the spy. No, a voice comes up behind her and says, no, I'm the spy, and stabs her in the heart with a boomerang. Captain Boomerang just killed Hack because he's the one that lit all of them out. And I guess Deadshot had nothing to do with this. He just wanted to get out to see his daughter and took advantage of it. So at this point, there's no Suicide Squad.
Interesting.
Yeah, and Amanda Waller is still dead. And all this is happening because of her death, and they still don't really know who killed her. Now, Boomerang said he's the spy, but we don't know who actually pulled that trigger.
Yeah.
We figured it was Deadshot because he's the gun expert, but it doesn't seem like he did it. So, can't wait for Suicide Squad issue number 13. They might reveal some more stuff in The Flash. Who knows?
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see where this all fits in.
Yeah. Because Captain Boomerang is going to play a big part of the next issue of The Flash, too. And he's playing a very big part in what's happening in Suicide Squad right now. We might get some detail from that, a little tie-in, maybe.
Yeah. Well, the next one up we had, do you want to take Hal Jordan? Or do you want me to? Because I want to take action myself.
I figured that. That's why I was like, ah.
That, and you don't want to have to pronounce that name multiple times.
Oh, geez. Yeah, you know. I was thinking of that. I was just like, I like the Green Lanterns more than Superman, so that's why I was doing it, but you're right. You take that name over.
Ooh,
that hard name.
Blasphemy.
Hey, you know, I gotta say his name backwards anyway. Make him say it backwards, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
But this is Hal Jordan, the Green Lanterns, issue number 16. As we've seen in the last episode, Guy Gardner, of course, is gonna go out and try to be a hero and take care of everything himself, knowing that it might end up bad, but he doesn't care because he's got enough moxie to take anyone out. He doesn't really care.
And you did not notice, I hadn't picked up the book yet
when
we reviewed
this
2 weeks ago. You didn't notice the shirt he's wearing.
I did not. This was a good callback to what he wore in the 90s, right?
Yeah, that he's wearing the Warrior W from when Guy Gardner was no longer Green Lantern, but he was the superhero called Warrior.
And he's wearing this shirt like it's just a regular shirt to him.
Yeah.
So this
so
is
he
a pretty
has
good
the t-shirt on.
But last we know, he was batting a Krillo. He's basically the equivalent to the Sinestro Corps as their Kilowog. But
he's about the right size for it, too.
Yeah, I think when they made the toys, I don't know, I'd never bought them. Those were the Build-A-Figures. But I think they basically had the same type of base for each one of them, him and Kilowog. So
okay.
they're very at least they were the same height. I know that. But as you get the Green Lanterns rounding up all the rest of the Sinestro Corps members that don't want to join the Green Lanterns, they still think of them as their enemies. The Sinestro Corps members that joined the Green Lanterns are taking them out, too. So it's a really numbers game right now. There's no way the regular Sinestro Corps members will get away. So that's fine. But now we get back into Space Sector 1974, where Guy and Akrillo's going at it. And they're talking trash to each other, and Akrillo still has his ring on at this point, while Guy's in his regular street clothes. And he's saying, you know, you didn't take off your ring yet. We need to do this. And immediately when Akrillo takes his ring off, he punches Guy. Now, Guy's getting beat to a pulp at this point, but as he's dazed and confused, he starts thinking back of his time on Earth with his drunk father would come home and beat him for not cleaning up the house. His father just seemed like a really big piece of trash.
Yeah.
So
basically, this whole book really tells us a lot of backstory on Guy Gardner and maybe why he's got the attitude that he does.
Yeah, with what as we go on through this, I don't blame him at all. With anyone having a childhood like this, you might as well look evil in the eye and take him on. Now, it's funny, I'm looking through this issue, I didn't pay attention to this. As he's getting beat up by Akrillo, he has flashbacks to his father beating him, but his father's shadow on the wall is the shadow of Akrillo. So, Guy's really, this is showing how messed up his psyche is right now, getting punched by an alien.
Yeah.
But Guy is knocked down on the ground, bloody nose, bloody mouth, face beaten up with one punch from him. Akrillo starts walking away like, fear, I have fear of everyone over this world, and me knocking you out just another proven point of it. And he's getting ready to put his ring back on, saying, man, this earthling had nothing in it at all. He's no challenge. Right as he's beginning to put on his ring, he gets a thud on his head. A guy threw a piece of something at him or a rock and says, hey, princess, where are you going? We still got to dance. We're not finished here yet. Let's give these guys a show. Now we're back on the Guardian and their universe, on their planet.
Yeah, they're back on Mogo.
And I didn't know that this was his husband. Do you text...
Yeah, say it, and that's why I remember say it and oh, it's Ganthet. The two of them were banished from the Guardians because they actually fell in love with each other.
That sounds... I don't know why, Ken. Does the Green Lanterns remind you a lot of Star Wars in some ways?
Kinda, with the Guardians being like the Jedi with no attachments and stuff?
Yeah. It's a mixture. It's to me like a mixture of Star Trek. Anything space-worthy, the Green Lanterns are.
Yeah.
But they see a blue light, a white light, and a green light all in the sky, and they're like, huh... We know who those two are. Did he get a Blue Lantern?
Well, that's what they had done. They had sent him to go find the Blue Lantern.
And they did it. I didn't know if they... I guess they believed in him enough, but that was pretty fast. I didn't think they were going to take him out that soon. But they did. And now they're back on the planet, and you get them to see Kilowog, of course. And they just tell him we're rounding up all the other bad Sinestro Corps members, and he's telling him John was mad at you. He's like, he knows what I do. He shouldn't be mad at me anymore. And they're talking, they're telling them that we got to go get the rest of them. And wait, let me look right here. They're going to try to find John and get everything back to normal here and try to fix everything since they're all back together once again. Now we're back on 1974, and we still having them fight each other. And once again, Guy is getting he looks like he did in the New 52 with the Red Lantern spew coming out of him. Like, there's just blood protruding from his mouth. It's bad. This guy's got a lot of broken bones, I know. He wouldn't be surprised if he has a cracked skull, missing teeth he's already got here. But every time he gets punched by him, he keeps getting these visions of when his drunken father would beat him and tell him how much of a piece of trash he is and how he'll never amount to anything. And he's like, well, I guess I'm just hard-headed because I'm not staying down. He's like, he hasn't met a human this stupid and foolish to keep getting back up like this. But this is when Guy... slams him through a wall. It's just like he does a spear into this brick panel right here and knocks him through there. And now you get John on this plan trying to hunt them down. He's like, I gotta get Guy because he's doing one of the most stupidest things I ever heard of him doing. So Krillo picks up Guy by the ears and starts ripping off his ears and from his head. He's like, you're trying to rip off my ears? That's a dirty move. Pulling my ears? What else are you gonna do next? Pull my hair? So now you get John and Chernak. They finally find Guy because they were tracking him down, and they see he's fighting. And Chernak's like, "Let's stop the fight. He doesn't. He there's no way he's gonna win. He's a human." John tells him, "Wait, he needs to do this." And then this is when Guy starts getting up, and he's hearing his father tell him in the back of his head, "Hey, what are you gonna do? Cry now, you big baby?" And then this is where Krillo's telling him the same thing. Really, I think he's now whatever Krillo's saying. He's hearing the same thing his father used to say, and he picks him up and said, "I feel it. The fear is coming over you." And he says, "No, that's not fear that's coming over me. This is more than what you think it is." So he goes in and punches Krillo right in the eyeball, grabs his eye, and pulls it right out. He yanks the guy's eye out of his socket. This is a very gruesome combo, guys. It's very bloody. And he tells him, "I know what you're thinking. How the hell does Guy Gardner take such a licking?" And as this is happening, Krillo's like, "My eye!" I mean, guys, this is really graphic. He's like, "My eye!" It's like literally holding it in his hand like, I can't see. And he tells him, "It all came from parenting. My old man was a drunk, and he hit me, and he just kept doing it. He liked to hit. And no matter what punch you give me, it will never amount to the punch that he gave me. So I'm just going to keep fighting back. You're nothing. My father broke me, and that's why I'm the way I am." So as he's punching the Krillo, he's thinking about punching his father at this point. He's like, "Say it, say it, say it." And he just punching the crap out of Krillo. His eye is now falling out of his socket. It's just completely out, laying on the ground, tongue out, teeth broken at this point, bloody face. He beat the crap out of an alien, and he says, "Say it one more time, I yield." So he won. So that means this guy's going to have to join the Green Lantern Corps, if either one of them can even stand after this.
Yeah.
So he says, "You're damn right you do." And he falls into John's arms, and he's like, he's out. He's not even making any sense at this point, but Akrillo's knocked out, Guy's knocked out. And they're going to need both medical attention. So I doubt that he's going to die, but it looked like Dai died in the fight doing so, but I don't think so.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, because Chernak actually does a scan on him as he's sitting there, and she said he's got massive internal bleeding and his heart rate is bottoming out.
And this is when he's being held in John's arm, and John's just screaming at him, "Guy, Guy, Guy." But I feel like in the next issue we're going to get him heading to a medical facility to
hopefully
patch him up.
Well, the next issue is actually called In Death's Grasp.
They better not kill off Guy. They better not kill Guy.
Yeah, they can't kill Guy Gardner. He's the one everybody likes to be annoyed with.
Exactly. And I like him from this. After this episode, I'm really... I have more of a new respect for Guy. I didn't know he went through all this as a kid. And I don't think they ever showed this in any other issues of the Green Lanterns.
I don't know if they've ever showed his backstory.
At least not that deep.
So, but the next issue we have is actually a really fun issue. We have Action Comics number 975, and it's actually the Superman Reborn storyline part 2. And we had the return of a classic DC, I don't know if you call him a villain. Basically, I just see him more as a nuisance.
Yeah, this guy doesn't do anything evil. He does things to annoy people.
But once again, with the television and comics coming in sync, we see the return of Mr. Mixius Pytlick. That's it. I almost said it the way I grew up saying it, Mixelplix, which is what they said on the Super Friends
cartoon show.
Yeah.
So I don't blame you for that one.
So remember last issue in Superman, John has basically been kidnapped. And they figured out that Clark Kent is the one that did it. Now in this one, we actually get to find out, finally, after a year, who this other Clark Kent is. And it was kind of a surprise, a little bit. But they had teased it a little bit last week. But you get Superman and Lois flying to Clark's apartment to find out who is this guy, where is John, basically looking for Jonathan. They break into the apartment, they start searching, and they can't find him anywhere. They start looking through all of the cabinets, and Superman is looking through his bedrooms and stuff. Lois goes to the fridge, and it's full of junk food and soda pop. She starts looking through the cabinets, and it's more junk food and... snack cakes and things. And she says, it looks like a kid or a 6-year-old did all the shopping for this place.
Mm-hmm. And chocolate syrup, you got soda, which I don't know why you put all that candy in a refrigerator, but
But Superman did a scan of the apartment. You can't hear any heartbeats except for his and Lois's. And then someone shows up right behind Lois. And you find it's Clark, the Clark Kent. And Superman asks him, where is John? And he says, who? So they start fighting back and forth. Superman picks him up by his lapel and tells him, it's like, you have to tell, where is my son, Jonathan? At which point, Clark kicks him and knocks him across the room. Now remember, Superman did all these tests on him and couldn't figure out anything because As far as any of the tests come back, this is Clark Kent. No superpowers, no nothing. But he finally says, he says, you're worrying about saving him. What I want to know is why you didn't save me.
Mm-hmm.
I was willing to help you, but you let me down. At this point, no one has any idea what is he talking about. He says, you left me alone. Superman goes to punch him. He catches the fist. And they're trying to find out, who are you in this? And Clark starts asking him, okay, hang on, let me see where I'm at. Okay. He basically comes down to, you know who I am. Just tell me who I am. And Superman tells him, what kind of sick game is this? He says, fine, a game? You like I like games. Let's play.
And this day going through a guessing game.
It flips. You find Luthor in the power suit, in the green power suit, picking up Superman by the throat and breaking all the cabinets. And he tells him straight up, you're a smart guy. Say my name. So he says, Luthor? He's like, wrong. It switches over. All of a sudden, it's Bizarro. And Superman says, well, Bizarro is like, that I'm wrong again. Then you all of a sudden switches to Brainiac. And it's like, who is this? Then it's Mongo, or Mongol. And then Parasite. And then Superman starts to put it together. And says, wait, is it possible? Then he says, finally, you're on the right track. Then Lois is looking at a snow globe looking thing. And says, I could have sworn I heard something. And then you switch to the cyborg Superman. To also tell him, say my name. And then it switches over to Doomsday. And Superman says, there's only one possibility. Mr. Ta-da! Mr. Mixius Pitlick.
Well, I was going to say, also in that snow globe Lois looked at, if you look, there's nothing but elves. And one of the elves looks strangely familiar.
Yeah. And you find out it's Mr. Mixius Pitlick. So they want to know, where's John? And Mixius Pitlick says, well, since you don't want to play, I thought maybe I'd give Super Junior a chance. They want to know where he is, and he keeps redirecting them and stuff, and all of a sudden he just disappears. He says, Mixius Pitlick, or he says, tell me where he is. Mixius Pitlick says, where who is? Ta-da, or ta-ta. And he said, he's basically making Mixius Pitlick in, or let me go, the whole thing here says, why he didn't do it, John didn't do anything to you. He says, maybe not, but you, on the other hand, forgot about me. In return, I'll see to it that you forget about him. Then maybe you'll have more time to play with your old friends. Or to be more precise, it'll be as though he never existed. No one will ever remember the little, dare I say it, imp, ever. And when Mixius Pitlick finally shows up, or disappears, Superman says, vanish, and I have no idea where to find him. And then Lois looks at him and says, find who, Clark? What are you doing, or what are we doing in your old apartment? And Superman turns around and says, wait a minute, Lois, are you okay? She's fine. And she says, I'm fine. And who is this Mixie whatever that you're talking about? And he says, John, we have to get John back. And she says, John who? And that's the end of the first half of this. We actually get a dual story here, because we actually have a back issue in this. So Superman number 19.
I like the extra.
Well, Superman 19 is going to be Lost Souls. And this being an anniversary issue, number 975, it's actually a double-size issue, too. So the next half of the story is The Man in the Purple Hat. And we get the story of Mixius Pitlick talking to John in this outer pocket dimension and telling stories about his run-ins, or his version of his run-ins with Superman, which is different than what John remembers. Because John has all Superman's tellings of this. But then Mixius Pitlick tells where he's been for the last little while. He had decided to finally, he said he was on average showing up every 3 to 5 months to have some fun with Superman and play some games. Well, the last time he went to pop in, something happened and he got thrown into a pocket dimension. And then you see Mr. Oz. And Mr. Oz has captured him and said, he says, you're probably trying to figure out why I put you here. And the pocket dimension he put him in negates all of Mixius Pitlick's powers. So it has a negative space, or this negative space prison nullifies your powers. You'll refrain from using them for the duration of your sentence. And what it is he's not actually holding him there because of anything he's done. He's holding him there because Mr. Oz has plans for Superman, and he doesn't want Mixius Pitlick getting in the way. He says, as soon as I'm done with Superman and this is over, I'll let you out and you can do whatever you want. That's fine. But Mixie keeps telling him, well, I have Superman. He knows how often I show up. He's going to come looking for me if I don't show up. And then he talks about, I had forgot all about, he actually brings up that he's got friends who are going to be looking for him. One is, he's got a hot girlfriend and the little weirdo in the bat suit. And there's a picture of Batmite. Now, I don't know Batmite very much, but is he supposed to be also from the fifth dimension?
Yeah, him, Mr. Pillix, and, like I said, Larry from Teen Titans. I think they're also going to be from the same world.
Ah,
they all
okay.
Like those little imps that was the so annoying towards that main hero.
Well, Mixie grabs and makes some clouds and relaxes and says, okay, well, I'll just wait here for Superman to show up and get me. Any minute. And then he starts marking off things, is getting all ticked off. Where is he? He just says, we have rules to this relationship and understanding. Every 3 months I pop in and do stuff, and then it all goes by, and then, well, maybe I'll forget a year or six goes by, but that's okay. He'll get him looking for me. Because he's Superman, and he saves everybody. But eventually he realizes that Superman has forgotten about him or something. And it says, well, I guess he didn't care. So, he's still telling all this to John. And he says, I don't understand. I was part of it from the beginning. Well, almost the beginning. The comics, the toys, I was on the cartoon show. So it's insinuating that Mixias Pitlick actually remembers all the animated series and stuff they've done. And they show Lego, and they show superpowers, and they show all this other stuff in these next couple things. So he talks about how, finally, he figures out, he realizes after he's thinking about this and all of his stuff with Superman, he realized, oh, wait, I know how to get out of here. The one thing Superman's always done to get rid of him is get him to say his name backwards. So he tries it, and he says his name backwards. And all of a sudden, and nothing happens right away. And he starts to pop, and then he pops back in. He's like, well, wait, maybe I need a little bit more power. So he says his name backwards a bunch of times, and it, all the automatic reactions happen all at once and finally popped him out of the universe. But then that pocket universe starts chasing after him because it knows he got free. So he's like, well, he had to come up with the disguise, and he had to come up with a spell so that this thing couldn't find him. So he cast a spell on himself to turn himself into Clark Kent 100%. To the point where he didn't even remember who he was for real. So he just... And at this point, Superman... This happened about a year ago at this point where Clark Kent... Or Superman... The Superman of the New 52 had just died. The new Superman... Or our original Superman hadn't stepped in yet.
Yeah, he had no idea about all this.
So there was no Clark Kent, so he was able to step right into Clark Kent's life. And from there on, he's been living life as Clark Kent, not remembering anything else. Now he didn't remember the Superman side of this. All he remembered was Clark Kent. And that's why when they did all the examinations and all the scans on him, he came up as being Clark Kent.
Yeah, there's no readings from the Superman part.
Exactly. So all of this he thought he was Clark Kent until he finally gets to the point where he finds Lois at the farm and sees Superman and Lois on the farm. And he sees the whole Superman family together, without him, what he thought should have been his family. That's what broke it in his head, and he realized who he actually was, and he remembered. And then all of a sudden, he was back, and he came up with the plan, to show his revenge on Superman. So that's when he kidnapped Jonathan to play games. If Superman's not going to play games with him, he'll play with Jonathan. And he comes up with the first game, and he says... you get one chance, one magic word, say the right one, and you win and get to go home. Say the wrong one, and all of the doors in this dimension will open, and you'll end up somewhere. And Jonathan says, well, what if I don't play? He says, you have 1 minute to make up your mind, then the doors open anyway. So, what are you going to do? And he thinks about it, and he starts to say missile flick backward, and he stops and says, no. He says, no, it's Tadalpur. Which, that goes back to the beginning of this story, when Superman was telling Jonathan about Mixie, Jonathan couldn't say his name, but he knew this was the guy in the purple hat.
Mm-hmm.
So he knew Mixoplex or Mixias Pitlick as Rumpeltat, meaning basically purple hat. So he says that backwards, and all of a sudden the door opens to the farm. He says, well, that's what I get for giving hints. I knew that it was too easy, and Jonathan goes running into the farm, looking for Mom and Dad. He opens the door, and Mixie is sitting there and says, well, now let's play some Parcheesi. Or go fish, or Hungry Hungry Hippos. Why not? We're here to play games.
He just wants a friend is all.
Yeah. And Jonathan looks at him and says, wait a minute. You said I could go home. And he says, and you went home. I didn't say that you could stay home. But you never asked that about that either, did you? He says, and Jonathan's like, you cheated. He says that he just used the same sneaky trick that Jonathan's dad's been using him on for years, tricking him into doing what he wanted. So, and Mixie grabs the cards and starts shuffling and says, okay, now, do you have any fives? And it looks like we're going to get another backstory in the next one, which is Mixie's revenge. So, I thought this was awesome. A great way to bring him back into the universe.
Yeah, this is one of the better bringbacks I've seen since Rebirth started.
Yeah.
Because this kept us guessing for weeks on weeks on weeks.
Well, for almost an entire year.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it has. Holy crap, that went by fast. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Maybe months. When do we get that in, like, the... Man, what
Well, the
what
new Clark was brought in right before, either right at Rebirth or right before Rebirth. You found the, or just after Rebirth. It was within the first month.
Yeah, and we saw the clone Clark Kent, we thought.
Yeah. So, but that's the our reviews for this week. I think we have one more thing to do.
Yeah, we gotta go somewhere.
And that song signifies it's time for us to take our weekly trip to the comic shop for our pull list for... wait a minute. I had it up in front of me. What date is the pull list on this one? This is the pull list for March 22nd, 2017. And we actually have 12 titles on this week. Now, as always, the pull list is brought to you by the Shazbots. That's their song, Comic Shop. Check them out on iTunes and Facebook and go over to theshazbots.com to actually get a preview of some of their stuff. But let them know the DC Superpower sent you. So, we actually, like I said, we have 12 issues for this week. The first one being Action Comics number 976. And this one is actually the Superman Reborn finale. So, we have, as this epic tale wraps up, Superman's life is drastically changed. And that's all we are saying for now. Except that you won't want to miss it. The art is done by Jaime Mendoza, Jamie Mendoza and Doug Menk. And is written by Dan Jurgens.
All right, and next we have Batman Beyond, issue number 6, Rise of Demon, part 1. A new world power that no one anticipated or recognized is reengineering large swaths of plant and aftermath on Brother Eye's destruction. Batman is drawn into the tale of global conquest after a violent visit from his old foe, Kirari. That's a new one for me.
She was in Batman chance. Beyond. I think she was from Batman Beyond originally, and she's like a master of poisons. Kirari was actually the name of a poison. Either that, or she was Batman the animated series.
Okay, Blue Girl, I think, right?
No, I think you're thinking of the Ink.
Oh, okay.
Give me just a minute while you're reading the rest of this. I'll look up Kirari.
Okay, his only chance at success, hating into the fingers of joining him in fight that looms over his head. Art done by Bernard Chang, and it is written by Dan Jurgens. No, Dan Jurgens. So.
Yeah, she's from the DC Animated Universe originally. Let me bring this up. I think actually she may have been from the animated. Yeah, she was actually from... Oh, come on. What series was... She was either Batman the Animated Series, or she was in...
Batman Beyond Animated Series?
Batman Beyond. I'm not sure.
No, she was the Blue Girl. She was still blue. Yeah, that
she
was
blue.
I remember her. Yeah, she had the light blue skin. She looked like something out of a desert.
Yeah, and it was. She was a Batman Beyond villain. Or no.
Okay.
Yeah.
This was later on the series. This is like it was toward the end of the Batman Beyond run.
Yeah, something like that. But I know she was like a master of poison. So it's cool to see her coming back into the comic books. So after that, next up, we have Batgirl number 9, Son of the Penguin part 3. Meeting your boyfriend's parents is always stressful. But when by parents you mean the Penguin, and by meeting you mean punching in the face, well then, you must be Batgirl. Babs gets to the bottom of the Penguin's involvement in Burnside and decides once and for all that Ethan is a hero or a villain. Or if Ethan is a hero or a villain. Now the art is done by Christian Wildgoose, and it's written by Hope Larson.
Cool, cool. Next we have Blue Beetle, issue number 7. Missing Families. That was my dog, sorry if you guys heard that. Kids with superpowers, mystical beings arriving in El Paso. Who or what has been behind the strange doings of Jaime Reyes' hometown is about to be revealed. It's a force so powerful that Dr. Fate has no choice but to team up with Blue Beetle, even though he still suspects that the Blue Beetle might have some connection to the evil entity they must battle. Art done by Scott Collins and written by Keith Griffin.
That's awesome. That Dr. Fate, has he been in the last couple episodes, or is this the first time he's actually been a full part of
like
the story?
Like, full on like this. I think he was in another one. I haven't been reading a lot of Blue Beetles, but whenever I hear a Dr. Fate name, I'll go get it. And I don't think he was in there like that.
See, if I had room in my pull list, or room in my wallet, I would be picking this up, because it's interesting to see that they brought Dr. Fate into this.
Yeah, and once again, he's going to be, hey, Blue Beetle and Dr. Fate are both going to be in Injustice. I just thought about that.
Yeah. Well, the next one up, we have Deathstroke number 15, Twilight Part 4. Faced with a career-ending diagnosis, Deathstroke is coached by Power Girl to reinvent himself and comes face-to-face with a rival assassin known as Deadline. Art done by Jason Paz and Carlo Pagulian, and written by Christopher Priest.
All right, and next we have Detective Comics issue number 953, Legal Shadows Part 4. Help arrives from a surprising and unwanted source, one of Batman's greatest foes. Art done by Christian Deuce Fernandez and written by James T. Tynion IV.
Okay. Next up, we have The Flash number 19, The Sins of the Father finale. Wally's quest for knowledge about his villainous father takes him and Barry Allen to the Australian outback and into the web of Captain Boomerang, one of the Flash's oldest enemies and the last person to see Wally's father reverse Flash alive. Art is done by Neil Gooch, and it's written by Joshua Williamson.
And this next one now,
we're going to have some stuff to talk about on this one.
Woo! This is the Green Lanterns, Hal Jordan Green Lanterns issue number 17, and it looked like Kyle Rayner's wearing his old school Green Lantern outfit. Not the one we've seen in the early 2000s or mid-2000s.
No, this is the original one, except for the lantern glowing away from the chest some.
And I think that just for enhancement of logo, like, hey, I'm back to being a Green Lantern. Uh-oh, something happened with the website. Whoa, here we go. Okay. Description for this is, Quest for Blue Lantern's finale. As both torchbearer of the Green Lantern Corps and the White Lantern of Life, Kyle Rayner proved he can wield the entire emotional spectrum. But when forced to choose which ring will he don and which corps will he join for the outgoing threat, or the oncoming threat that's facing all of the time and space. And the art's done by Ethan Van Sciver and written by Robert Venditti.
Cool.
Now, if Guy does not die in the next issue, as we said in about 3 issues ago, we got to see all 4 of the Green Lanterns come back, although one of them was still a White Lantern. Guy's going to live, and if Kyle's coming back to the Green Lanterns, we are going to have our 4 original Green Lanterns back together once again.
It looks like it, but this one here is interesting, that the fact that Kyle may just choose to be a Green Lantern for now.
Mm-hmm. Which I'm completely okay with. I want him to.
Exactly. So, like I said, the only difference in the picture here between this and his original costume is the lantern glowing away from his chest a little bit, the way they've decided to do it recently with a lot of them.
Right. And like I said, I think that just for the issue purpose, I think his outfit's still going to be the same.
Yeah. So, moving on, next up, we have the Hellblazer number 8, The Smokeless Fire Part 2. Mercury tries to save John from his own worst impulses, but Constantine's got a bit between his teeth on this hunt for the djinn. Or he's got the bit between his teeth. That makes more sense. But Constantine's got the bit between his teeth on this hunt for the djinn. A new character emerges from the shadows, an uneasy alliance is formed. John Constantine goes all magician on us, and Paris may never be the same again. Art is done by Philip Tan, and it's written by Simon Oliver. Are you still reading Hellblazer?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, I'll put you like this. I'm still buying the issues. I haven't read the past 2.
Okay.
I have them, so I'm still collecting it. next, we have Suicide Squad issue number 14. This goes in a little bit more, not with what we were talking about in Flash, but definitely what's been going on in this story right here. Burn Down the House, Part 4. Consumed by rage following the brutal murder of one of his Suicide Squad comrades, Harley Quinn goes AWOL on a one psychotic woman mission of vengeance against Rustrum and his unstoppable new ally and the most dangerous foe Harley has ever faced. It's Deadshot. Art done by Danny McKay, John Romita Jr., and written by Rob Williams.
Then next up, we can move on to Teen Titans number 6. And this one is one that looks awesome, because right there on the cover, we get Aqualad.
Now, is your Is the website for you showing someone completely different in the back?
Yeah, the picture in the background is a totally different picture. I don't know what that is from. So now, that looks like an old Titans one, because that looks like Cassie. And that could be the old Bumblebee, the top of her head.
I'm trying to think also if that's the Terror from... is that the Terror? The Power Girl from Earth 2. And that's... oh, man, what was his name? He was in the Superman and the Elite. I'm trying to think of his name.
I don't know.
Oh, man. He was one of my, he reminded me of if Constantine was to go evil and had real superpowers. That's the best way I can describe him.
Well, I think that's just a glitch, because the cover here is the one we've been seeing in the books and stuff.
Yeah. So, and, well, DC might have gave away a little something there.
Maybe.
But, Manchester Black. That's who it... Have you ever watched Superman Elite or read the...
No, I've not seen it yet.
Oh, man, you gotta see that. That's a different take on Superman, but imagine Superman coming... You know how Batman comes across the Suicide Squad sometimes?
Yeah.
That's basically what Superman came across. This was his, and these guys were not really, I would say, villains, but they were definitely anti-heroes, and they did not see eye to eye.
Okay.
That's actually one of my favorite Supermans. That's also another thing that got me into Superman, now I think of it.
Cool.
But anyways, well, I'll just read the description.
Teen Titans number 6, The Rise of Aqualad, Part 1. New story, new city, and new member? As the team adjusts to the new lives at Titan's Tower, Damian investigates a series of strange occurrences in San Francisco. Meanwhile, Jackson Hyde heads west to fulfill his destiny and finds himself in the crosshairs of the Teen Titans. The art is done by Wade Von Grawbadger and Koi Pham, and is written by Benjamin Percy. And the cover of this looks awesome, especially if you're a Young Justice fan, because it looks like Aqualad straight out of Young Justice, except with the blonde hair.
Yeah. I mean, he got the blonde hair, too. Like, literally everything out of here looked just like Young Justice. Because before, he just had the dreadlocks. I'm trying to remember in not Teen Titans, but in DC's Rebirth, I think he looked like he did previously. He had just the dreadlocks, but now he looks
was
like...
Was he in Rebirth?
Yeah, he was.
Okay.
He had, like, one panel, but he was in there. He was one of the few characters, like, oh, he's being brought back. He wasn't
He's had a couple appearances in Aquaman over the last couple of year, last year, hasn't he?
No.
I think it was in one of the first Aquaman books.
For the Reaper?
I might be wrong, but I thought he was.
Maybe. He might have been recently, and I remember we said we had to cut back on some of our pull lists, so yeah. I haven't read the past couple of Aquaman, but when it first started, he was in there up to at least like issue number 7. His dad was, of course, but...
Okay.
That might have been. I have to go back. Now I'm going to have to go buy the last 5 issues so I can figure that out. and which is nothing wrong. I do like the Aquaman story. Just one of those things I had to eliminate from the money spending.
Yeah.
But the last one we got here is Wonder Woman issue number 19. The Truth Part 3. Diana, Steve, and Etta come face to face with their newest foes. The deadly group known as Poison. But what do they do? What do they have to do with the plot to unreveal Wonder Woman's life? They're still looking for it. Art done by Liam Sharp and Greg Rucka. Man, this Rebirth thing has taken a toll on Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah. So, but that's the end of our pull list for this week. And that... go ahead.
I'll just mention, it seems like all these other characters have been dealing with a lot of stuff with Rebirth except for Batman, but in a couple weeks, we're going to see that happening.
Oh, yeah. So, we've only got a couple weeks till we have that Flash and Flash Batman crossover. The 4 issues there that are actually going to bring the and have them investigating more about the comedian's button that was found in the wall of the Batcave. So, but that brings us to the end of another show. So, I know I'm going to be looking back at the show here. It's like I'm going to be looking for those trading card game and get at least one of the starter sets and just see how the game plays.
Okay. And I'll let you know also once Injustice comes out about that gaming.
Oh, yeah. Well, maybe that'll be the game to get me to finally buy an Xbox One. I don't know. So, but Vernon, why don't you let everybody know how to get a hold of us?
You guys can find us on our social media of Instagram and Twitter. Or I'm sorry, Instagram and Facebook, DC Superpowers Podcast. And for our Twitter, it's @SuperpowersDC. And for my personal uses, you can find me on my Instagram, HowlinThatWolf. My Facebook, Vernon McWayne Moore, and my Twitter, Viella.
You can find me on Instagram and Twitter as GW1Ken, and you can find me on Facebook as Ken Rose. You can also find the show at DCSuperPowersPodcast@gmail.com, and also we are proud members of the Tangent Bound and the Weeby Geeks Networks at TangentBoundNetwork.com and WeebyGeeksPC.com. So, with that, we got a lot of stuff looking forward to. We got the trading card game. We got Wonder Woman and everything else coming from... and coming up in the next month or so, we're getting close to the finale of all of the DC TV shows.
Man, that came up quick.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't feel like it's been this long.
So, Vernon, did you have anything else you wanted to bring up about before we wrap this up tonight?
No, I can't think of nothing. I'm waiting for all this other comic books to come out next week. We've got a big, good list of stuff to buy. And I think that's really it.
Okay, well, Super Friends, Vernon, I'll see you next week. And Super Friends, we'll see you next week.
You're listening to a Weeby Geeks Network podcast.